Craig Bond is an economist professor at the Pardee Rand Graduate School, and writing about the likely effects of price increases on commissary patronage. Craig, thank you for joining me today. The commissary issue is a sticky one for the Department of Defense for a number of different reasons. What specifically was your mission to look at when it comes to the commissary system for Department of Defense people? Thanks for joining me today.
Sure, my pleasure. The purpose of the study was to take a really high look at what the likely effects of a price increase at, throughout the entire commissary system would do to not only the commissaries themselves, but also to patrons of the commissaries. It turns out that the commissary system, 245 commissaries worldwide, basically sells groceries at greatly discounted costs to service members and their families and retirees as well. And if the subsidy to those commissaries, about $1.4 billion as of the budget a couple of years ago, gets cut significantly, then it seems likely that the commissaries would have to raise prices in some way. Now, the law would have to be changed in order to do that, in order to compensate. And so the question became, for us, fairly narrow: if prices did in fact increase, who bears the brunt of those costs?
And as you examined this, how did you go about collecting the information and then analyzing the information that you used to come to the conclusions? We'll talk about those in a minute, but how did you get where you went?
Certainly. The main source of information came from the economics literature, and basically the literature on store choice. There has been quite a bit of research, in fact, done on how consumers actually go about deciding where to shop. Now, of course, most of that literature deals with the private sector, and so you can get things like what happens if a particular grocery chain promotes an item, what are the substitution patterns across stores for various consumers. Other sorts of relevant research are what happens if, say, an everyday low-price store, such as a Walmart, relocates in a community. What happens to the distribution of spending across various stores? And so really, we decided to use a literature review to sort of go in and try to figure out what the private sector can tell us about relevant parameters, mainly the responsiveness of consumers to different changes, and then try to apply that range to the commissary system. We had to do that because we actually don't know a lot about the responsiveness of individual commissary patrons or that lot as a whole. And in fact, we'd be talking about price increases that, quite frankly, are generally an order of magnitude larger than what we might see in the market. So what we did as we went through the analysis was sort of end up with a range of relevant parameters. In economics, we call them elasticities, which is a measure of responsiveness of demand. And we sort of gave a range of what we thought might happen.
The term that you just used, applying that range to the information that you gained from the private sector to the commissary system, is interesting to me, Craig, because it strikes me there's probably not, it's not a direct correlation. You can't just say it looks like this in the private sector, so it will look like this in the commissary system, for a number of factors, I imagine.
Yeah, one would suspect. It turns out that the way that most consumers, and we would assume service members and their families, in addition to retirees, make choices over where to shop on a variety of factors. And these can include variable cost types of factors. So think about that as price, right? What is the price of the bundle that I'm going to purchase? And then there's a whole bunch of other factors that come into play. So one that might sort of resonate is the idea of travel costs, right? All things equal, a consumer would rather tend to travel a smaller distance in order to purchase their groceries rather than go a long way. Well, as it turns out, there are some differences in the distance, the average distances that service members have to go to, say, a private sector grocer versus a commissary. In fact, it turns out that commissaries tend to be located about 2.5 times farther away than a substitute grocer. And yet we still have service members that do, in fact, go and patronize the commissaries, most likely because of the price benefits that come from shopping there. And so there are a variety of other sorts of factors, the size of the bundle that's planned to be purchased. And so we know, that, for example, that commissary shoppers tend to purchase larger average bundles at the commissaries. So, of course, there's variation across service members and their families. There are quality considerations of both the products and services. There are variety issues. There are store loyalty issues, and the idea that a particular store could create sort of a community environment that's beneficial to the community at large. And then there are all sorts of household demographic issues. And so it turns out that by all of the evidence that we could piece together on from the results of the literature that pre-exists, our suspicion would be that commissary shoppers tend to be quite sensitive to prices.
The idea of that then fits with the discussion that we continue to hear on an ongoing basis about what level of support the Department of Defense will continue to offer. One of the observations that you make here, there are several potential secondary and non-market effects of increasing commissary price levels that might further influence a benefit-cost calculation of a change in commissary pricing structures. What that says to me, if I'm interpreting that correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Craig, is that while price may be numero uno, and it might be, you know, 1A, 1B, and 1C, it's not the only factor that will drive decision-making. I was struck particularly by the mention of the community making function that a commissary plays. You made a moment ago.
That's right. Anecdotal evidence suggests that especially many retirees value that particular benefit quite highly. Right, it's a place where they can go and communicate with other retirees and other service members. And although we don't have any quantitative estimates of those sorts of benefits, anecdotally, it seems like that's important. There are also some others, right? So we have, for example, the fact that the commissary system is in fact a non-pay benefit for service members. And in fact, in surveys, it turns out that somewhere between 70% to 80% of officers and enlisted personnel rank a commissary benefit as either high or the highest non-pay benefit that they actually receive. So that's important, of course, to families. It also turns out that there are some potentially sort of risk-related benefits that we might imagine as a result of the commissary system. So we know, for example, that incomes are stochastic in a two-income household. Out for the spouse that is not in the military, perhaps they bear some risk in terms of being employed sort of permanently. And the commissary, even if someone doesn't shop at the commissary at current, it may be that the option of doing so is valuable to them in the case of some sort of an income shock. So, for example, if a spouse was to lose a job and they were shopping at Whole Foods, which tends to be slightly more expensive, then perhaps the availability of the commissaries now is in fact a benefit in the case that the shock actually gets realized. And even though you're not using it now, you might be willing to pay in order to maintain that option going forward. So there are quite a few other non-market benefits that might be associated with the commissary system, and quite frankly, they need quantifying in order to make some good decisions about benefits and costs.
Craig Bond is an economist and professor at the Pardee Rand Graduate School. That's one of the recommendations that you make. Another is analysis of the effects of price changes should take consumer responsiveness into account. And that's the piece that we talked about, I imagine, at the beginning of our conversation, which is exactly where that balance is between price levels that would make the customers move and would not make them move.
That's exactly right. I mean, that if there is one big takeaway from the study, it's that as we as a society sort of think about whether this benefit is worthwhile, whether we would want to continue to subsidize a commissary system, it's important to realize that we have to take into account behaviors from consumers. A naive analysis that says, okay, if we just increase prices to X level and everyone's going to behave exactly as they did before is really unrealistic. In fact, the evidence is quite the opposite. As we know that there are substitutes available, for example, that are closer, if the price advantage in the commissary system was to be eroded, it seems very likely that a fairly large number of service members and their families and retirees would shift to non-commissary alternatives. That sort of has some spiraling effects. If that happens, then overall revenues, despite the price increase, overall revenues to the commissary system could go down. And that could, in fact, ultimately be fairly damaging to this potential benefit. I should also mention that even if service members and their families decided to substitute, their grocery bills would likely go up, although perhaps not to the extent of the full price increase in the commissaries.
So that comment, Craig, brings to mind the term unintended consequences, and I think maybe that's maybe a good way to sum up the third recommendation. Further research, he writes, needed to quantify the demand responsiveness to price changes and changes to the size of non-market benefits, which ultimately impacts store choice. And it sounds like that's what you're recommending. Consider all of the unintended consequences beyond price. Consider the community effect. Consider all the perception of the commissaries as a highly valued benefit and so on in the decision-making process. Am I on track there?
I think that's exactly right. We, you know, it can be easy to fall into a trap that says, okay, as you suggested, price is numero uno. Well, it's not the only thing. And so in order to make good decisions, we should know not only about the costs and who bears the costs of any potential policy change, such as an increase in prices of commissaries, and also the benefit side, right? What do we get? What do we free up when we decrease the commissary subsidy and apply that money, for example, somewhere else? It's a relatively complicated question. It's not easy to answer, and we hope that what this research actually does is sort of provide some focus as to where future research might go and how future analyses might be carried out.